Hey writers, KJ here, telling you, as I do every week, that this episode is proudly sponsored by Author Accelerator. I know many of you have tried the two-tier outline, explored a class, or even signed up to work with a coach, and we would love to hear how it's going. Head on over to our Facebook group to give us an update and let us know what you think. And now, on with the show.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. I don't remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to rustle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two, three.
Okay.
Hey, I'm KJ Delantonia, and this is Hashtag AmWriting, the weekly podcast about writing all the things, short things, long things, fiction, nonfiction, pitches, proposals. This is the podcast about sitting down and getting your work done, and I hope you're having better luck with that lately than I am.
I'm Serena Bowen. I am the author of 35-ish romance novels, and you can always find me at your favorite ebook retailer or at serenabowen.com.
I am KJ Delantonia, the author of The Chicken Sisters and the nonfiction book How to Be a Happier Parent, former editor of the Motherlode blog at the New York Times, and working on a revision of my second novel and in much, much agony there too, as you will know if you follow me anywhere. And we have a guest today that we are delighted to be talking to. I want to welcome Alicia Rye. Alicia Rye writes fun, joyful, contemporary romances about smart, mature people who still struggle to find love. And by mature, I do not mean old. I realized that after I wrote it. I mean, these characters make good choices and try to understand themselves and other people, but it is still not easy for them to solve their romantic difficulties. And that makes them super fun to read about and not frustrating, as sometimes characters can be. So welcome, Alicia.
Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
We're delighted. So Alicia's most recent book is First Comes Like, and that's part of her Modern Love series. And we have a ton of questions to ask you, and we're just going to spring them on you. But the first thing that I wanted to talk about is that I just finished First Comes Like. I really enjoyed it. It's the third in, I could say it's the third in a series, but it doesn't matter. I think I have read one of the others, but not the other one, but it didn't, you know, it doesn't matter at all. That's not how this kind of series works. But the thing that I really noticed about First Comes Like is that it takes place in a subtly post-COVID universe. And I really want to talk to you about that.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think when I was writing it, so I started writing it, my first draft was actually due in May of last year, or April of last year. And so, you know, we were sort of in the thick of COVID. And when I got the revisions back, you know, I was slogging through them and all I could think was none of this sounds right. Like it all felt kind of wrong. And I think it's because, you know, this is such a sort of global psychological trauma we're all going through, you know, in one way or another this past year. And so when I was writing it, it just didn't ring right. And I think that's one of the things with, for me at least, about contemporary romance is there is an element of world building in that the world has to feel like the world you're living in some way or, you know, one way, shape or another. And so, you know, as I revised it, I slowly started putting more and more in. And I think for me, the major thing is her family is all full of healthcare workers. And my family is all full of healthcare workers. And there was no way that I could, you know, I can imagine a world past this where there weren't some lingering effects, you know, not always physically or anything like that, but just mentally. And so I had to sort of work that in one way or another.
Yeah, you had, so there were three different sort of ways that it appeared for me, at least. And one is that although it was never said that the characters had had friends and family die of COVID, it was pretty clear to me that that was at least a likely thing that had happened because several of them had people who had died recently in their past. So there was that. And then the main character had recently been really sick and lonely as a result, as had some other characters. And also, so that those were sort of facts, but then just the emotional piece of it, the fact that she and other characters in the book were clearly coming off of a period of great loneliness. That really gave the book a really special feeling. It was different than anything I'd read before.
Yeah. And I think like that's something. And I did try to make it subtle because, you know, it is a romance and a rom-com at its heart, you know, because we do want a bit of escapism. But I also think that, you know, we're all sort of in this shared psychological trauma that we're all going through. And it is sort of a universal feeling of loneliness. Even if you do have people, you know, living in your home with you, it is still sort of this deep isolation that we've all gone through, or period of it. And there's no way that anyone can get through that and not, I think, feel some sort of after effects. And especially when it comes to something like a romance where, you know, the emotional aspect is key, it's almost impossible, I felt, to ignore it. So, there's a lot of people who haven't caught it, and there's a lot of people who have caught it. And so, you know, I think the reaction is kind of split. So hopefully I did my job well enough that it's not.
Well, it's really subtle and so well done. And to me, it made the narrative really durable, because everybody who listens to this podcast who writes fiction has been struggling for a year of, you know, how to handle this. And we have collectively heard so many authors say, my agent will not let me put COVID in my book. Like, don't put that plot line around COVID. Don't do this. Don't do that. But here we are, like, rolling into year number two, and it's getting weird.
Yeah. And I honestly think, like, you know, one of the great things I think about contemporary romance in particular is that it really is sort of a snapshot of the time that we write it and that we read it. And, you know, it does age out, you know, like the technology won't be the same in 5 years, 10 years, 2 years. But hopefully, you know, sort of that feeling will continue, and, you know, the love will continue, of course, that's the hope. But, you know, just the part of this society that we're facing right now, you know, it's okay to memorialize that sometimes and to.
Yeah. And of course your book embraces technology in another way, because it has this wonderful story hook about catfishing, which is of course not the main conflict of a romance, because in romance we're so good at having a story hook that leads you to the real, you know, the real guts of the story. And so in so many ways we're all leaning into the times anyway. Mm-hmm. And here's some messaging saying, like, oh, you can definitely have that technology hook in your book, but don't touch COVID. Yeah. Like, it's just felt really strange to me.
Yeah.
Did you wrestle with whether to do sort of the whole masks and menus that you take pictures of? Like, did you wrestle with how many details to use? Because in the end, it's much more of an emotional overtone than it is a detail-oriented overtone.
Yeah, I did a little bit, but not too much, because I did want to sort of make it not too obvious and in their face. I think there is like a part where I had something there. I don't remember if it was hand washing or what. And my editor was like, maybe we've had enough. And I took it out. So, but I do think some things will stick around. Like, I think the menus, you know, taking the barcode, picture of the barcode on the menus, I think that's a brilliant idea. I was like, why didn't we have this before COVID? I hate handling all those dirty menus. So I do think some things are just going to stick around no matter what. And so that I didn't mind putting in there, because I was like, I don't think that'll be dated anytime soon. I think that's just going to be how restaurants work for a while. Probably saves them money too. So it's fine.
Probably.
Yeah. So I didn't wrestle too much with that part. But there, like, you know, some things I honestly think, like, humans are so adaptable, and the things that we've come up with during this time are amazing to me. And I think that it was fun to sort of put those things in this book, because I was like, these are innovative. Like, these are things that are going to stay. So, yeah, I think, you know, even in 5 years, we're going to be taking pictures on our table, I hope.
Yeah. So when you did come up with the idea, or when you decided to incorporate it, did you get pushback? I mean, you got a little pushback, you said, from your editor about the hand washing.
Yeah.
But did you get any pushback? I wouldn't think so, because it's not.
No. And I think the main thing is the story is still escapism. It's still, you know, fantasy. It's still romance at its heart. It's upbeat. It's optimistic. And, you know, I think, well, especially for me, one thing a piece of advice I got a while ago, I watched some masterclass. I think it was Judd Apatow's masterclass on comedy writing. And one thing he said in there was, you know, when he writes a comedy, he takes something serious and then makes it funny. And my intention is not to make COVID funny, but my intention is to show people like living and loving and having fun and, you know, living their lives in a post-COVID world. And I think that that's quite possible. But that is sort of how I write my romances. You know, I take something maybe, you know, Girl Gone Viral dealt a lot with PTSD and, you know, panic disorder, anxiety attacks. But I think at its heart, it was still upbeat and funny and romantic. So I think it's quite possible to have both, to have a drama and have comedy, you know, mushed together. And I think it makes it even better, you know. And that's not to knock like fluffy romances. I love my fluffy romances, but for me particularly when I write, that's what I look for. So no, I didn't get really any pushback. I think we're all trying to navigate, as you said, how to write this. You know, how do you write a contemporary world where you don't know what it's going to look like in 6 months? And mm-hmm. so I think we just have to all make guesses. Like we're making all just making educated guesses on what the world will look like when our book comes out.
Yes, yeah. We do.
Yeah, it's really challenging.
Can we talk for a moment about the evolution of your career? Because you have lovely books on your backlist. And it looks like you went from indie to traditional publishing. And we have a lot of listeners who think about that over time and am I in the right place? And I just wonder how that evolved for you.
So I started actually with digital publishing. So I was with Semain for a few years. My first book was out in 2009. And then I went to indie publishing and then I went to traditional publishing. So yeah, it has evolved quite a bit over the past, 11 years? So long. But it is an odd track, I think, a little bit, or for at the time, it was a bit of an odd track. Most people, you know, in 2009, 2008, they'd go from traditional and then back, you know, like back to indie, then, you know, bop around to digital. So in that respect, I think it's not the historical way that romance authors have, you know, gone through publishing. But yeah, it was almost, I think one of the things about publishing is that it is so specific to the person and to the author and to the time period we're in. So I don't know if that trajectory would work today for me or for anybody, you know. So it is just such a, you know, the industry just sort of changes on a sneeze. So, but I do think that it's quite possible to go from indie published to self to traditionally published. I think it depends on what your goals are and where you want to get, you know, and what your ultimate sort of overall goal was.
When you wrote The Right Swipe, were you aiming to go back to traditional? That was the first of these most recent traditional ones that you
correct.
Wrote.
Yeah, so The Right Swipe, so I have 6 books now that are with Avon, and the Forbidden Heart series was the first of those 6, so it was those 3 books, and then Modern Love after that. I don't know if I was aiming. I think with every book in my career, I just sort of think like, okay, well, where will this be the best fit? And, you know, what's the best place to get this in front of readers? And that was at the time for this series in particular, the best fit for it.
Avon is such a savvy publisher. I really like the women over there.
For sure. Yeah. And I love my editor. My editor's Erica Sang, and she's been fantastic to work with. So
yeah,
it's always good when you have a good working relationship with your editor because it just makes things so much easier.
Is she your editor for both series?
She is my editor for both series, yeah, and hopefully for, you know, countless others. We're very good.
How did that work to decide to start a new one? Was it sort of pretty clear, well, this was supposed to be 3 books and now I'm going to move to a different group of people? Or, you know, what did it look like?
So for me, usually 3 books is all I can do for any series. I get kind of tired with, you know, just writing sort of the same world. With this particular one, I have 2 spinoff characters, so Gia and Rhiannon. Were spun off from the Forbidden Heart series. And when I wrote them, I remember thinking like, oh, I wish this was longer than 3 books because I really like these characters. But at the same time, it was Forbidden Hearts was very carefully constructed to be a 3-book series because it is very interconnected with each other. Mm. You know, the whole thing is sort of like a long running soap opera. So every book is like a new, you know, a new reveal is made about these 2 or 3 families. So it would have been very hard to work in extra books into that. And I said, you know, I like these characters. I'd like to transfer them, you know, same world, different coast. We'll just go like start sort of fresh with them. And And these books are very different in tone, I think, and in feeling than the Forbidden Heart series. So it works as a whole new series.
And will this one keep going? Because there are sisters.
There are sisters. And so a couple of the sisters were in the Forbidden Hearts series. So Sadia was the second book in the Forbidden Heart series. But I think for now I'm going to give it a bit of a rest because I think I do need to try something a little new and different. And I'll, hopefully I can announce what that new and different thing is soon. But it is nice to know that there are characters I can come back to. Like, I love Lakshmi so much. I'd love to write a book for her.
Yes, that would be a fun one.
Yeah, and you know, she would be a fun character to write. So maybe at some point I can either pull her into another universe or, you know, or just come back to this series because there are a couple of people that I would love to go back to.
That's a good segue into the other thing that I wanted to talk about, which is those the characters that you've created are in so many ways emotionally savvy, and yet, you know, kind of they still struggle to overcome the one thing that is often keeping them, you know, well, especially in specifically in First Comes Like, they're struggling to overcome the thing that's keeping them from opening themselves up to another person. And Lakshmi really just whaps your main character. She's a secondary character who just whaps your main character up the side of the head with what she's doing emotionally. And I thought that was really interesting. You don't often see that slug of realization midway through the book, but it really worked because then there was a lot more time to enjoy spending with characters who understood themselves a little bit better.
Yeah.
Was that conscious? Did you know you were starting it a little early?
I think so. You know, for me, pacing is something I think about a lot when I'm writing. And, you know, if the pacing is off, the whole book feels off. So I spend a lot of time with that. And I did, I think, originally have that realization towards the end of the book. And I moved it because it didn't really give her the space she needed to absorb what had been told to her. And this is something that happens to me a lot and, you know, where I'll be like, oh, struggling. So, like, I don't understand why this isn't working out. And then, you know, a friend or, you know, a loved one will come along and be like, oh, is it possible because it's because of this? And I go, oh, yeah, like, that is obviously what this problem is. So for me, that was very much sort of ripped from myself because I do think that, and I think a lot of people, I think that's a relatable problem where you're like, I don't know why I'm anxious today. Like, I don't know why I'm sabotaging this. Like, I don't know why I'm doing this. And then somebody who has sort of like a bird's eye view of you will come along and slap you and say, this is why you're doing this. Like, this is what you do. And so, you know, you can go, oh, geez, like, and especially when it's someone who, you know, at that time, Lakshmi and Gia had kind of a contentious relationship where, you know, they, I think, were a little too similar to each other in a lot of ways. So for somebody who has sort of studied you to critique you to come along and say, this is why you're doing this and to sort of get your growth from that, I think is especially poignant for someone like Gia who craves approval so much to have somebody who doesn't approve of her, you know, tell her maybe what's up with her. So yeah, I did make that as a conscious choice to move it more towards the center. And I think, you know, a lot of books, you know, the growth doesn't have to always be the payoff. Sometimes the realization is, or, you know, the realization doesn't have to be the payoff. The realization can be in the middle and the growth can be the payoff.
Yeah. I thought that really worked well. And I also appreciated that, you didn't set up, it looked like their families might be more antagonistic towards them than they turned out to be. And that was a nice experience too, to watch them, the characters realize that maybe they'd been wrong about who their families were.
Yeah. I think, you know, you spend so much time with a group of people and you grow up with them and you think you know them and then, you know, they'll turn around and surprise you out of nowhere. I think that's a pretty universal experience. I know my family does it to me all the time where I'm like, wait, what'd you say? I didn't know you'd react that way to this. And they do. But I think in general, you know, one thing is sometimes we have to have better expectations of people and especially your loved ones. Maybe you don't think they'll give you your approval, or maybe you think they're going to give you a hard time and then they don't. And it's nice to have that when they don't.
So as you move through iterations of a book like this, what kind of things do you find that you're able to get close to right at the beginning? And what kind of things do you find you're still reshaping as you get into revisions?
So I'm actually in revisions now, so I can answer this very honestly. But yeah. I was, and I just looked up at my, I glanced up at my bulletin board, which you can't see, which is like full of basically like notes and string and stuff like that. But it is, it, for me, I can usually get the first half of the book right in terms of plot. And I don't think plot is ever really my issue. I usually have a good idea of plot when I go into a book. But getting sort of the characters, the secondary characters nailed, you know, like my primary characters are great, but getting their relationship sorted out is usually what takes me the longest time, and how those relationships affect the primary characters. So that's usually what I spend most of my time in revisions on. And I tried so hard with this last book because I'm in, you know, the sort of still the first draft, and it's due in a few weeks, sadly. But I tried so hard to just, and every time I tried so hard to just spew out a first draft, get it done, and then go fix it. And then around chapter 15, 16, I stop and I go, no, I don't know what I'm doing. Look, I don't know how to do this. I have to go back. So right now I'm going back and I'm fixing things, you know, that are in the first few chapters to make the base a little bit stronger so I know where the characters are going to go from there. Mm-hmm. In terms of like psychologically and emotionally, I know where they're going to go plot-wise, but that's not always where the magic happens sometimes.
Yeah. I end up with, I seem to end up with books that I've written the first half of, you know, 10 or 12 times, and the last chapters, you know, 3 times.
Yeah, I know. That's usually how it happens. I do spend more time on the second and third drafts on the whole thing, but the first time I'm like, I'm just going to keep rewriting these first 10 chapters till I get it right.
Man, revisions.
I actually prefer, I would love revisions more than getting the first part out. It's torture.
I think my problem is that this revision involves a lot of getting the first part out.
Yeah, same here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the worst.
Yeah. It's just because you feel like you have stuff, but then you're like, yes, but
it's not quite there. It's not good enough for other eyes to see it quite yet.
It's interesting what you said, that you spend a lot of time on secondary characters. And I feel that I do this as well, which in romance is not always how it's done. You know, there's a lot of romance where you really only have the couple on the page. I once heard this amazing talk about secondary characters from Kristen Higgins. Mm. And she introduced me to this idea that I have never forgotten. And of course, some books I do a better job than others. But she said that what always makes secondary characters work hard for her is something she calls double linking, where your sister is also your boss, or your uncle is also the mayor, or, you know, if you have two relationships to a secondary character, then when things get complicated, they get really complicated.
Oh, and
she says that this double linking always saves the soggy middles of her books. And I just found that to be pure gold.
That is beautiful. Yeah.
You taught me that and it's great.
Yeah. That's fantastic advice. Yeah. I think I do that inadvertently, but that's a good thing to remember when I'm, you know, in a jam.
Yeah, for me, those secondary characters, like, you know, they'll be there and then you sort of get partway to the end and you realize that the only reason they're doing the things is so that the thing you want to happen will happen.
Yeah.
And then I have to go back and give them their own reasons for doing things.
Because it's important to make them, like, people in their own right, not just there to serve your main character.
And then that messes everything up.
Yeah, I know.
Turn them.
It's a struggle.
I just wish we could somehow find a way to be where the first draft of everything didn't feel like you were had two Barbie dolls in
each hand and they were
it would be nice. It would be real nice.
Yeah, the plastic stage.
Yes, exactly that.
That's a good word for it.
That is a good word for it. Yeah.
Yes.
All right, well, we should turn to talking about what we've been reading. So my most recent read, as I told you guys when we started, was, in fact, First Comes Like. And I have to say, I loved it. This was a perfect distraction. It was lovely that it was clearly post-COVID, but not too post-COVID, because unfortunately, we are not post-COVID as we record. It is February, and we are still COVID. Post-COVID presumably is coming, but I really, I enjoyed this, and I will say that I typically don't like a romance that is really focused only on the getting together of the two main characters. And this is very much not this. This is these two people, and in many ways, they're together through the whole book. In some ways, it's their figuring themselves out that is the journey of the book. And I really liked it. So thank you for providing me with several evenings of pleasant distraction.
Fantastic. I love to hear it. Love to hear it.
I am also reading First Comes Like by Alicia Rye right now.
I don't usually do this.
I know, but it's true. It's half done on my Kindle right now. But I also just finished Sweetheart by Sarah Mayberry, who is a favorite author of mine. And she has written romance for years, but she also writes for one of the longest running soap operas in Australia called Neighbours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So she's just a lot of fun. And she wrote Sweetheart for my new imprint, actually. And she did that thing we were just talking about, which is to take something serious, but also it becomes the fun bit. She wrote about a family member with mental health issues as part of the complication of her, this gorgeous romance between a barista and a coffee roaster. And it is just a delight from start to finish.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, you had me at barista.
Yeah.
I like a good barista romance. Gosh, we usually start with our guest Alicia and we didn't. So what have you been reading? Give us good advice.
Yeah, I've been reading, I'm sort of just getting over my reading slump. And I think we've all kind of had those in and out. But I read Saleika Snyder's Big Bad Wolf, which I loved. It just came out like a couple of weeks ago. And it's sort of like an urban fantasy for people who like Lona Andrews or Nalini Singh. Excellent, excellent sort of gritty urban fantasy book. I also read Sally Thorne's Second First Impressions, which is her upcoming book in March. It's adorable. I love it so much. Sally Thorne is just like an auto-buy sort of, you know, great, like concrete author for me. And I also read, I'm starting to read Kate Claiborne's newest or upcoming book. And it reminded me how much I love.
She wrote Love Lettering. Yeah. We both really like that.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic book. I love it so much. So, really enjoyed that. And I'm diving into her second one shortly.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been great. Alicia, where do you hang out most on social media that people can find and follow you?
Oh, gosh, pretty much everywhere. So I'm on Twitter at my name, Alicia Rye. Otherwise, I'm on Instagram at Alicia Rye Writes. And sadly, I can't get my name anywhere else. So I'm on TikTok at The Real Alicia Rye.
You're on TikTok.
You're the first person
we've talked to who's TikToking.
Yeah,
that we've talked to about it. All right. Momentary segue while being aware of the time into what are you doing on TikTok?
Oh, I'm doing a lot. I'm doing the most, probably, my sister would say. And it is, I do like, sometimes I do little skits, I just do like funny things, really. Just things that make me happy. And it's been really fun. I think TikTok is just a bunch of frustrated, like, former theater kids. And I'm a frustrated former theater kid, so I fit right in. And, you know, if you're a ham especially, it works out great. So I love TikTok. Really love it.
Fun.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, you can find us, #AmWriting, mostly on the Facebook, in our Facebook group, #AmWriting. I don't think you'll find us on Facebook that often beyond that. And we would love to hear what you thought of the episode, whether or not you are trying to put COVID into your story or trying to keep COVID out of your story and how that's going. You know, we'd just love to hear back from you. And that's it for this episode. Serena, you want to take us out?
I would love to. Until next week, keep your butts in the chair and your heads in the game.
#AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Save. Pause. Stop.
Stop.
Thank you.